This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Back in February of last year, Israel implemented the world's first COVID vaccine pass. The Green Pass is a digital government certificate that allowed only vaccinated Israelis to enter into certain public spaces such as bars, restaurants, and theaters. Now, at that time, there were no such policies in the United States, but it was pretty clear to us that they would eventually get here. So in March, we did a show exploring the complexities of using a health-based pass system to limit or allow access to different parts of society. Ruth Faden joined us for that conversation. She's founder of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics and a professor at Johns Hopkins University. And we asked her the simplest of all questions. What is the purpose of these vaccine passes or passports?
It's not entirely clear, actually. The intent is to be able to open up the economy and also open up people's lives with less public health risk. So that's the objective. Whether to what extent the passports will actually achieve those objectives is something we need to interrogate.
Now, recall, last March, vaccines were slowly being rolled out worldwide. So when these policies were first discussed, efforts were thought of as emergency measures to finally curb the global pandemic. But what else could vaccine passes curb? Well, Nida Farahani was also on that show last March. She's a professor of law and philosophy at Duke University.
I think we hastily put into place emergency measures that yield a lot of our civil liberties. You know, we're scared. We're all willing to accept, in the moment, these different ways of infringing on our civil liberties, increasing surveillance, having all our everyday activities, our temperature monitor, giving health information easily and freely away to companies and to governments. And we don't think when we're doing that, that it's unbelievably important to make sure that we have sunset provisions that are going to end those things when the emergency ends. And once they're in place without those, it's too late.
Well, it has been a full year now. In that time, several countries have implemented similar vaccine passes. France, Germany, Italy, China, Canada, to name a few. And here in the United States, major cities have done the same. New York, San Francisco, and New Orleans last year. And more recently, Chicago, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Boston, all imposing vaccine pass policies just last month. Well, something else also happened just last month. Israel, the first country to launch vaccine passes last year, has moved towards eliminating the Green Pass program. And why? Well, a governmental health advisory panel determined that the Green Pass is not effective. So Israeli policymakers will be deciding whether or not to end the program in the coming weeks. So today we're going to talk about vaccine passes now, a year later, what they hope to achieve in various countries and cities here in the United States, what they could cost, what they could gain. And we'll start with Maya Peled-Raz. She's head of community health programs at the University of Haifa in Israel. She also co-authored the paper Lessons from Israel's COVID-19 Green Pass Program. It was published in the Israel Journal of Health Policy Research. Maya Peled-Raz, welcome to you.
Hello, Meghna.
So first of all, I'd love to start with some definitions so that we're operating from a place of knowledge rather than supposition. What was the original intention of the Green Pass program when it was created last year in Israel?
Okay, so the Green Pass, the original Green Pass program, coincided with the third wave that we experienced. And it's important to realize that Israel, in a way, was coming into the waves before everyone else. So we were like 2 months ahead of everybody else. So everybody else had a chance to learn from us, but we had no one else to learn from. We just had to make the decisions on our own. And another thing that's really important to understand is that Israel, the whole country, was under lockdown in the first and the second wave. So when the third wave arrived and vaccines started rolling in. And in Israel, they started rolling in and being available much faster and sooner than in everywhere else for different reasons than the Green Pass or badge, as we called it, was implemented first. And the idea behind it was definitely debate about that, to really allow for the opening of the spheres, the economic sphere, the educational sphere, instead of going into a third lockdown. So it started as a purely preemptive measure that was actually aimed at infringing less, allowing for less infringement on human rights.
Okay, so because of the severity of the lockdown that Israel was experiencing at the
exactly.
time. Okay, so that's really important context here. So
exactly.
so then ostensibly it allowed Israelis who had been vaccinated access to those parts of society that we just talked about. I presume it was successful in doing that. So what has changed from that time until just last month, when we started reading that an Israeli health advisory panel is saying that the Green Pass is no longer effective?
First of all, it was extremely successful. And it really changed the face of the way that Israel, managed the COVID pandemic up to that point. And it allowed us to come out of the third wave much faster with, quite fewer negative impacts on our lives. And what changed from then to now? The variant. Definitely the variant. So
the Omicron.
Yes, yes, definitely. So we started with the Alpha. The third wave was Delta. They were substantially different than this variant, the Omicron. And now we have a variant that infects everybody, regardless of being vaccinated. The major difference in between those vaccinated and those who are not is in the severity of the disease. Mm-hmm. And what we see right now is that despite the really huge, unprecedented numbers of people being infected, the burden on the medical system, on the health system, is no greater than it was in the previous waves. So we know we can handle it.
In Israel.
In Israel, yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, so let me ask you, here in the United States, we've seen a whole variety of reasons being put forth by policymakers to implement vaccine passes now, which include, the opening up of society, as you've talked about, but that's just a different cup of tea here in the United States. But what about increasing vaccination rates? Did the Green Pass make a difference on that front in Israel?
Well, objectively and empirically, it definitely did. There were peaks of vaccination every time that we reenacted the green badge, because we had intermissions between waves. We relaxed the green badge our requirements, and coming into the fourth and then now the fifth wave, once the requirements were re-heightened, we kept every time seeing a peak in vaccination compliance. But
can I just jump in here for a second? So I'll let you get to your qualification there in a moment. But when when the pass was relaxed between waves, how was it determined when to relax it? Were Israelis told, well, if infection rates get below a certain level, we will pull back on the green pass? How did that work?
It wasn't pre-planned, so there wasn't a goal that was set in advance, which I'm criticizing, looking back at it. And, many people criticized at the time as well, not having this, you know, specific goal to reach. But it was known that when we get to a low level of infection, it will be elevated, alleviated, sorry, and it has been. So yeah, that's exactly what happens. So every time we reach, you know, really low numbers of people who are no longer flooding the emergency rooms, the Green Pass was, you know, retracted.
Okay. So in your paper, one of the lessons, though, that you put forth is that while the Green Pass was essential at the times that that you're talking about, it also imposed the sorts of restrictions that, in the abstract, you write, were not consonant with solidarity and trust building. So can you talk about what the downsides were then?
Well, you know, when we're talking solidarity, you need to ask yourself if solidarity is really a value appreciated in your own country. So I will not answer that question for the United States, but...
No, this is for the Israeli context.
Yeah, exactly. So it definitely is a value appreciated in a communitarian state as Israel. And we really, you know, we want people to feel as part of a group, as being part of a mission that we are all striving to achieve. And it's really clear that when you are telling certain people you are excluded, this does not, help that in any way. But I think that the main...
Maya, if you just hang on for a second, we have to take a quick break. And I'll come back from the break and let you finish this important thought. But I'm afraid I have to interrupt you just for 1 minute here. We're talking about vaccine pass programs around the world and here in the United States. What are they trying to achieve, and will they be effective now? We'll be back in 1 minute. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about vaccine pass programs or passports and why many U.S. cities are bringing vaccine pass programs online now, just as Israel, which has had one for a year, is considering pulling back from its Green Pass program. We'll also hear a little bit later in this hour from France and how things have been going there, from New Orleans and from other American cities too. But right now I'm joined by Maya Peled-Raz. She's head of the Community Health Program at the University of Haifa in Israel, and she wrote a paper called Lessons from Israel's COVID-19 Green Pass Program. And Maya, I had to interrupt you there so we could take that quick break, but you were sort of making a point about some of the negative impacts that were seen in Israel due to the Green Pass program.
Yeah, so we discussed solidarity, which is an issue, but I think that the bigger issue that we experienced in Israel was the trust or distrust problem, because research shows that in Israel, the major reason for people being vaccine hesitant is actually the fact that they're thinking people who want to actively exercise their discretion. And when the state comes and tells them, okay, so this is, you have to, that's it. If you don't vaccinate, you cannot do this and that. It really creates a backlash. And that was combined with the sort of sporadic, if not a little bit erratic, decision-making processes in the government. So that had definitely a negative impact. but we did not experience other side effects that should be considered in other countries, especially in the United States, for example, inequality or, you know, a lack of access issues, because vaccines are available to everybody in Israel.
Well, can I just jump in here for a second? Because if I recall from last year, there was some concern about, for example, Arab Israelis having a more difficult time accessing vaccines, or members of ultra-Orthodox groups not showing high percentages of vaccine hesitancy. Has that changed?
Those are two different issues, hesitancies and access. So we did have a problem, not of access to the vaccines, but of access to good, clean data that would really bring them into the fold. And that was recognized kinda pretty early on. And then I think it was that gap was closed in a 2 months period. So that definitely is an issue that should be, you know, monitored and really worked towards in order to prevent those problems.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, I could talk with you for the whole hour, but we have people waiting in France and other places for us to plug into. But I have one last question for you, Maya, if I could. Given what your analysis of Israel's experience with the Green Pass over the past year, as I said at the top of the show, the Israeli government now has been advised by a health panel to perhaps eliminate the program. Would you advise the government to completely eliminate the Green Pass program?
In Israel, yes, at this point. Because now, it only serves as an incentive tool. And I really don't like it as an incentive tool. Not because I don't think we need to use incentives. I think we should, but that's a bad tool for that purpose. It's masked as a preemptive tool while actually trying to be an incentive. And I much rather people know when they are pushed or when they are protected. And if you want to push them, just say so. So find them, you know, or, you know, even put them in jail. I'm exaggerating the point, but don't act as if it's a preemptive tool and then just try to push them.
Yeah. And as you said earlier, the Omicron variant sort of really equalized in terms of who was getting infected, and it maybe rendered one of the protective measures of the pass obsolete.
Exactly.
But Maya Peled-Raz, head of the community health program at the University of Haifa in Israel, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, so that was interesting, an update of what's happened over the past year in Israel. Let's turn now to France, where Mickaël Oliot-Barton joins us. He's associate professor at the University of Paris-Dauphine, who studies health and economic policy at the interface between science and decision-making, and also author of The Effect of COVID Certificates on Vaccine Uptake, Health Outcomes, and the Economy. Professor Oliot-Barton, welcome to you.
Hello, Magna. Thank you.
So first of all, describe to us the current state of the vaccine pass program, as I'm calling it generally, in France. How does it work?
So in France, they call it pass sanitaire, which is a sort of pass of COVID certificate, which allows three criteria: having a negative test, having been infected with COVID, or having been vaccinated. And this was introduced on the 12th of July. So from 12th of July onward, you are required to have one of these three criteria to access most of public spaces.
Most public spaces. Can you?
Including restaurants, train stations, airports, cinemas. So all places that already have a ticketing, they will require a ticket plus the certificate. So hotels, bars, discotheques, all kinds of places that are indoors and that have already a entrance that requires some sort of payment or something like this.
You just included train stations and airports as well?
As well.
Okay.
Yes. On the 12th of July, that was a certificate that required full vaccination. And at that time, that meant two doses. And then from 24th of November onwards, the government announced that the COVID certificates would soon include the booster doses as a requirement to get it valid. So from the 24th of November onward, the COVID certificate has been replaced by three doses instead of two. Mm-hmm. And then very lately, so 2 weeks ago, a new form of certificate dropped the negative tests from the equation. And now it's called a vaccine pass. So that requires vaccination, so three doses to get entry to these spaces.
Okay, so over the course of the several months that you just described, from July to November, what was the French government's stated goal for the implementation of the pass sanitaire?
Yeah, so this is what is interesting. I think that the incentivizing people to get vaccinated, that was announced as the goal. So it was announced by the president himself in TV saying, well, now we're going to put this COVID certificate everywhere to incentivize people to get vaccinated. So we have to recall that by the beginning of July, we had 50% people vaccinated in France, as opposed to 55 in the US, mm-hmm. and vaccination rates were going down. And 3 months later, France had 75% vaccinated, where the US had 64. Mm-hmm. So the effect on vaccine uptake was huge. And finally, the same effect has been observed for booster doses. So on the 24th of November, only 9% of the French had a booster, as opposed to 13% in the US. And today, it's 48% of the French, as opposed to 26% of the US. So the incentivizing aspect, the incentives created by this tool have been excessively effective in France.
Okay. So you've seen a significant then increase, as you just described. But if I heard you correctly, full vaccination in France now includes the booster shot. But you said as of today, it's still just under 50% of French people would qualify as fully vaccinated.
Well, so it's not exactly this. Let's say that now the COVID certificate requires full vaccination, and full vaccination means either two doses that have less than 7 months. So it kind of expires. Ah. The second dose expires with the waning of immunity. So after 7 months, if you did not get a booster dose or if you did not get infected, because infection counts as one vaccine dose, if you don't get any of those, then we consider that your immunity is near to zero, and then you lose your certificate. But if you got your second dose in, let's say, in October, then you still have your COVID certificate, which is valid.
I see. Whatever. Okay. Yeah. So this is really, really interesting because, as you heard Maya Peled-Raz describe, in Israel, the goal was to open up society. Here in France, you're stating clearly that the goal was to increase vaccination rates, which it seems as if the pass has been. Can you attribute causation to the pass sanitaire, or is it sort of just a correlation between the?
No, okay. I think we can. Okay, so well, the objective was both, but then but it was stated explicitly as also incentivizing vaccination, but it was also to provide security to events. Uh-huh. But this second objective was soon discovered or deemed not so effective because many unvaccinated were attending events just with a negative test and they were getting infected. So that was already with the Delta wave, that was already problematic. So this of these two objectives that were announced, one was became more dominant with time.
I see.
Go
ahead.
What was your other question?
Well, actually, I was just going to ask, what impact has this had, the increase in vaccination rates, in terms of what we've seen globally regarding the Omicron variant?
Yeah, so we have done a statistical or an econometric work which accounts for measuring what part of the vaccine uptake can be attributed to the implementation of this policy and what doesn't, right? So for that, We can attribute to France 13 percentage points of the current vaccine uptake. So now there's like about 80% of the whole population that is vaccinated. We estimate that only 67% would be vaccinated today without the COVID certificate. And this requires doing some econometrics of, we have to take into account, we compared France that did this policy with a combination of countries that are similar in terms of demographics, in terms of supply and vaccine hesitancy.
Okay, so you're definitely finding a causation there, which is powerful data. At the same time, I'm also seeing, I'm just looking at French health data. France experienced the exact same exponential rise in case numbers with the Omicron variant, as did, you know, most of the rest of the world. So in terms of limiting the number of cases, did the pass sanitaire have any effect there?
Yeah, so that's what I was saying, that this other objective has become less and less relevant. And I think that we all acknowledge that this does not work. The initial data for Delta suggested that with the third doses, transmission was really curbed. So it would have, if we had Delta stayed among us, it would have been really useful for that. But with Omicron, it's sure that this aspect has to be forgotten. So I think that the idea of COVID certificates to incentivize vaccination is to link liberties or to link some privileges to people that are vaccinated, that behave well in a social sense. This is the most effective. There was a paper before, prior all this real life experience from Kluivert and others, mm-hmm. published in the Proceedings of the National Academy, that was based on surveys, was quantifying how many people would get vaccinated if you give them freedom-like incentives or financial-type incentives or just making vaccines more available in pharmacies or at your doctor. And it's interesting because the observed effect was bigger than it was expected in countries like France, but it was also a little bit smaller than predicted in countries like Germany or Italy.
Right.
So it's not only the COVID certificate, it's also the way and timing that this policy is announced that matters.
Exactly. Well, on that note, Associate Professor Michael Olliot-Barton at the University of Paris Dauphine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks to you.
Okay, so this is fascinating because the question of timing. So let's move now to New Orleans, where Dr. Jennifer Avegno joins us. She's director of the New Orleans Health Department. Welcome to On Point.
Hello, Magna.
So I want to focus first with you on, I think, what's happening today, which is, and please do correct me if I'm wrong because the news moves rather quickly, but as of today, children 5 years old and above in New Orleans need to be vaccinated to attend school. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Our public schools put that requirement in place in mid-December. We've had a vaccine mandate similar to New York and other cities since mid-August, since the height of the Delta surge, that required a dose of vaccine for adults for entry into restaurants, bars, and other higher risk sectors. And as of today, that mandate requires a full dose series, so a two dose of an mRNA or a single Johnson & Johnson for everyone 5 and up. So it's in lockstep with the public schools requirement for the vaccination to attend school.
Okay, so I'm looking at some data from the city of New Orleans. And again, this is coming, I believe, from your department, so correct me
yes.
if I'm wrong. But as of January 26th, I'm seeing that roughly 38% of 5 to 17-year-olds in New Orleans had been fully vaccinated. So what's going to happen to those young people? Can they not go to school?
Yeah, so we've been working really hard with our schools. Actually, as of today, at least 56% of children have gotten one shot, and we're above 40%. So
okay.
We're making some progress. Every school has been working really, really hard. You know, it's interesting. New Orleans has a completely 100% charter system. So all of the charter schools got together separately and agreed to do this as a group, which is pretty tremendous because they know, they saw the learning loss, they saw the devastation that COVID caused. So every one of them has been working with our local partners, our healthcare systems, and others to bring vaccinations to schools, to have large events, just as we've been working with our partners in the state. And over the last few weeks, there's been a tremendous response. Mm. We've seen hundreds and hundreds of kids coming. Louisiana has one of the more generous exemption forms for opting out of vaccination, and that was true before COVID. But the schools are reporting they've seen very, very few parents turning in those exemption forms. So what that indicates is that parents want to do this. It just has to be on their timeline.
Okay, but just to be clear, before we take a quick break, and I want to keep you with us, Dr. Evegno, but for those 50% of kids who haven't even had the first dose, are they not going to school as of today?
No, I believe they're working with the schools to figure out when they are going to get the first dose.
Okay, so stand by here for just a minute because we're talking a lot more after the break about vaccine pass programs now focusing here in the United States. So we'll be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today, we're talking about vaccine pass programs, vaccine passport programs, whatever you want to call them. We did a show similar to this a year ago when Israel became the first country in the world to institute a nationwide vaccine pass program. Interestingly, this month, or actually I should say at the end of last month, an Israeli health panel advised the government to eliminate its vaccine pass program. That is happening just as many cities in the United States are newly adopting their vaccine pass programs. And I'm joined today by Dr. Jennifer Evegno. She is the director of the New Orleans Health Department. And Dr. Evegno, we were talking about schools a minute ago, but we could do another whole hour about that. We probably will sometime in the future. But you had also mentioned that citywide, though, there was a vaccine program, pass program that was implemented last year. Now, again, I'm looking at data from your department. And as again, this is January 26th, so I'm a week off. But only 66% of all New Orleanians had been fully vaccinated as of about a week ago. So at this point in time, with that number still in mind, with the Omicron surge, having shown that past programs in other cities weren't terribly effective in stopping the Omicron spread, can you tell me what the goal of New Orleans' vaccine pass program is now?
Yeah, absolutely. And our, as I mentioned, ours was enacted during the midst of the Delta surge, when it was very, very clear that the unvaccinated were being hospitalized and dying at significantly higher rates. And so this was a way to boost our local vaccination so that we could avoid just the deaths and destruction that we had seen. You know, if you remember, New Orleans was one of the first hotspots. And in March 2020, for a while, we had the highest caseload and the highest death rate in the world. So we know full well what happens when you don't put in mitigation measures. And so that we enacted it in April, it's helped significantly. You know, our percentages of total vaccination rates, certainly adult vaccination rates, are higher than most of the regions around us and indeed the national average. And what we've seen with that is that our hospitalizations and our deaths have been lower than areas just immediately around us and even those across the state that do not have high rates of vaccination, do not have the mandate. And, you know, we've had a mask mandate as well for a longer period of time. So it's all about layered mitigation measures. What makes New Orleans uniquely vulnerable is our many, many repeated large events that bring hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of individuals to the city,
Mardi
coming
Gras,
from
right?
all over. Exactly. Yeah. As we're about to launch into Carnival, we know what happened with Carnival 2020. It didn't start COVID, but it certainly made it spread like wildfire, not only in our own city, but certainly to other areas from people coming in, going out. And so we have to take mitigation measures to protect our residents and also those who do choose to visit us.
Okay, so one more question for you. The vaccine pass program is a kind of mitigation that prevents those people who haven't been vaccinated from accessing certain parts of society. I mean, that's just a fact, right? That's the purpose of the pass. But so,
well, no, it's a vaccine or a negative test.
Or
so
a negative
test. You don't
test.
Have to be vaccinated. You can show a negative test.
Okay, right? Good. That's an important clarification then.
Right.
But at what point in time has your department or other civic leaders in New Orleans, have you put in sort of a sunset clause or a metric by which you could say if New Orleans gets past this point, say in infection rates or what have you, we will no longer need a vaccine pass program?
Right. I think no one wants it to be forever. That's for sure. I think for us, it's about metrics. It's about hospital capacity, which has been strained during Omicron, which normally is strained during our carnival and festival season, even without a pandemic. And, the effect on the vulnerable and deaths. And so as we look at the calendar and we look at the next few months of repeated large events, we think that it's probably safe, and in speaking to public health experts all over the country, they've advised us to consider leaving it in through them. It's our hope that, again, like everyone's hope, that Omicron is a sign that things are becoming endemic and that we're not going to have the kinds of surges in the future that are going to overwhelm our healthcare system as it's been in the last few weeks. And so at that point, I think it is going to be safe to remove the mandate. But we do, as you said, we're about 2/3 of the entire city vaccinated. We know that that's good, but that's probably not where we need to be for long-lasting protection.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Jennifer Avegno, Director of the Health Department for the City of New Orleans, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's get another view, one more view here. This is joining us now is Seema Mohapatra from Dallas, Texas. She's a visiting professor of law at SMU Dedman School of Law and a leading expert in health law and bioethics. Professor Mohapatra, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so you've heard lots of different reasons from Israel, from France, from New Orleans about why at certain times the concept of a vaccine pass was considered a useful and legitimate form of mitigation. What are your concerns about vaccine passes right now?
Well, so one concern is that it is probably scientifically flawed to have a vaccine passport program and think that is going to protect you from infection. And we saw that in cities like New York that had the pass systems and still had high infections. And so one thing when we have public health interventions, we want to make sure that they're scientifically based and that they earn the trust of the public. And that is one concern because the effects of losing that trust are going to be way longer than this pandemic.
Well, and that's exactly one of my. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's. I was just going to dovetail what you said with the fact that's what we heard Maya Peled-Raz say was one of the negative outcomes in Israel that they were concerned about.
Exactly. And I think that we need to not be short-sighted and have some long-term goals. These vaccine passport systems take a lot of money and time to set up. And so when these were set up last year, think about if instead of having those passport systems, if we had instead investment in rapid testing infrastructure, if we had some more effective public health communication strategies. I just think those would have been more effective than vaccine passport systems, which were not scientifically effective. Even though they increased vaccination rates, my question is, at what cost did they do that?
Right. And the increased vaccination rates. So, I mean, it's like a really complex story there, because we know that increased vaccination helps keep people out of the hospital, right? Because vaccinated individuals are dramatically less likely to become severely ill with COVID.
Absolutely. But I think we need to do whatever we can to encourage people to get vaccinated. And that includes making sure that you have access to vaccinations, access to boosters. We see now that populations that did not have access to vaccinations or hospitals during the first COVID wave, we're seeing some of the same problems occur right now.
Yeah. But then I was going to say, on the flip side, increased vaccination rates, as we have seen with Omicron, didn't do much at all to stop the infection rate, overall infection rate. But there's a deeper problem or a set of concerns here in the United States that you've been writing about, Professor Mohapatra, and that is the possibility of any kind of prohibitive program like a vaccine pass to be sort of unequally administered across various groups of Americans. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so one of my concerns throughout this pandemic has been about how some of these public health interventions are policed. And so on paper, some of these programs, you're supposed to make sure that everybody has these vaccine certificate programs. However, there is concern based on some of our, you know, prior experience during the pandemic that the people that are going to be policed may be more people of color. We saw that in New York with social distancing violations, that even though, you know, with social distancing violations, we saw that it was disproportionately Black and Latino people that were actually cited for these violations. And so there is a concern about whether everybody's going to be asked for their passport or not. And you know, when we're thinking about these kinds of programs, we think about why do we have these vaccine passport programs, right? You have a choice about going to a certain kind of recreational activity. We want to make sure that everybody feels safe in those kinds of spaces. It makes sense to make sure that we have masks, we have testing. However, I'm not sure that passports are the way to go.
So I want to just follow up with something specific here to the United States, and that is the vaccine pass programs in places like New York, soon in Boston, that the program applies all the way down to children age 5 and above. Because I'm looking at New York here, for example, and right now, according to the Department of Health in the city of New York, kids 5 to 17 in New York, 50% of them, 38% are not yet vaccinated at all, and 11 are partially vaccinated. So half of the children of the city of New York are either not or partially. And yet, fairly, I think now, actually, they won't be able to go to museums, et cetera. Do you have concerns about that?
Yes. I mean, I think that we have ways to make some of these spaces open and safe with masking, with social distancing. And I'm not sure that vaccine passports are the only way to go. We definitely need to have vaccine programs, you know, whether they're at schools or making sure that parents have time off so they can take their children to get vaccinations, make sure that they're easily accessible. However, it is not clear that at this point, with those kinds of numbers, that this is a vaccine passport program is doing what it's supposed to do. When we're talking about New Orleans, New Orleans has a testing option as well as an option for vaccination passports. You know, that is great as long as tests are accessible as well.
What about for folks out there, both in public health and maybe more broadly listening, who say everything has been tried to increase vaccination rates, and so now no more carrots. It's time to apply the stick, like a vaccine passport is, because that's just what we have to do to get vaccination rates up. What's your response to that?
So my response to that is that we have seen that rates of vaccine hesitancy have gone down in certain populations as we've increased access. So, for example, Black Americans have really decrease their vaccine hesitancy as we've increased access of where you can get vaccinations. So I think focusing, I don't think we've done everything in order to make sure that we have increased those kinds of access. There are different groups of people that are hesitant to vaccinations for different reasons. And I think public health has a duty to address each of those populations. And they might be addressed in different ways, and a one-size-fits-all solution might not work. And so in order to decrease vaccine hesitancy, we need to make sure that we have community programs that ensure that we have can build trust in those communities. We want to make sure that we have very clear and scientifically based health communication that's understandable. I think there is some fear about the fact that if you have these programs and the thought is that you can go, you can go to a restaurant, you can be safe, when we have things like Omicron where we have these the virus spread, we lose credibility in public health. And so I think we need to make sure that we are designing programs and investing in programs that are scientifically based, that long-term will work. And so, that rapid testing infrastructure, having things that are in place, access to facilities for vaccination that are not just pop-up facilities, those kinds of things, more long-term solutions. So it's not just right now, let's check off a box and act like we're doing something. Instead of let's try to make these investments in these communities, so whatever the next emergency is, we have these this infrastructure in place.
So in your papers, though, you've written very clearly on this. I mean, in one of your papers, you wrote, quote, broad mandates for proof of vaccination create a false sense of security while also layering on new societal risks. And I would add to that, last year, the WHO itself warned pretty vigorously against vaccine mandates or passport programs. I mean, the European director of the WHO said mandates around vaccination are an absolute last resort and only applicable when all other feasible options to improve vaccination uptake have been exhausted. And yet, just right now, last month, this month, and next month in the United States, we have some of the biggest cities in the country who now, at the end of the Omicron wave, are instituting these kinds of vaccine pass programs. I mean, so what would you advise them on things that they can do to mitigate those societal concerns that you've written about with their pass programs?
Yes, exactly. And I'm glad you brought up the WHO, because I was just checking what our global vaccination rates were. 1 in 9 globally in terms of vaccination rates. And so when we think about the fact that 67% of the U.S. is vaccinated, there are countries where we have such a low percentage of vaccinations. So this is not, there is a global equity issue as well. And so for cities and states and that want to feel like they're doing something in order to get their rates down, I think there are many ways, first encouraging vaccinations and making sure that we have information that is available to people that might be, hesitant to get the vaccine, that might not have time off. I mean, having policies, workplace-based policies that allow people to get vaccinations and take time off if they need to have symptoms of the vaccinations, making sure that we're investing in some of these contact tracing, other kinds of policies that are long-term rather than these short-term answers.
Well, Seema Mohapatra, visiting professor of law at the SMU Dedman School of Law, with us from Dallas, Texas. Thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.